Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
Coming up on podcast 1071, Tesla in Berlin have been delayed by 6 months, or have they? Maybe it's just three conflicting reports, and do any of them even matter? We'll find out on the podcast today. Stick around. Also coming up, we are going to talk about how Ford are bringing back the Lightning name in the F-150 for their EV version. More and bigger charging solutions for the UK when they're on motorway roads, and a rival partnering with Uber to make an EV for rideshare drivers. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily. First one of the week. My name is Martin Lee. I go through every EV story, so you don't have to. We will start with the news from, I saw it on Twitter, actually, first of all, about Tesla being possibly delayed. Now, Christian Hertzner is a journalist and says the series production starting at Tesla's Giga Berlin is delayed until the end of January 2022, according to the outlet Automobil Vocker, citing company sources. Among other issues, it cites problems between the structural battery pack and the new cells. These are the 4680 cells. He says the series production start at Tesla's Giga Berlin being delayed, and citing those unnamed sources is always like the first red flag for me, because whilst certain journalists, and this isn't him doing, he's just reporting what the Automobil Vocker said, when you do have those anonymous sources, you start to have to apply some more stricter and rigorous journalistic principles to it. And there's very good reasons why you can keep and should keep sources anonymous at times, but all of a sudden you start to go, okay, so it's a single report, unnamed sources. Well, let's dig into this and see what they really said. Well, it was reported very widely, and so many of the kind of EV press went with it, but wider as well. Bloomberg, for instance, saying that Tesla's German plant is being delayed until next year. The factory outside of Berlin won't start production before the end of January next year because of delays affecting the pack output, German trade magazine Automobil Vocker reported. Elon Musk giving the team 6 more months to complete the project, which sounds very unlike Elon Musk. It's not like they said, look, Elon, we're going to be delayed by a few days, a few weeks. We've got some integration problems. And he was like, you know what, guys? Take 6 months. Just chill out. Berlin's beautiful this time of year. Go to the park. It'll be lovely. Sit by the river. Get back to me after Christmas. So that doesn't sound like it's right anyway. Tesla's factory outside Berlin won't start production before the end of January next year due to delays affecting battery pack output, according to this Bloomberg article. Link in the show notes if you want to read more. Always be careful as well when articles like this talk about production, because it can mean so many different things. Is it volume production? Is it the first 100 vehicles off the line as they're working out whether the software and the networks and the robots are all working as they should be? So careful with that. Also, in a report today, we see the Berlin Spectator website saying that in quite some time, Elon Musk hadn't said anything about the Brandenburg project, at least not since slamming German authorities for their bureaucracy, demanding changes to the authorization process in the land of sausage and cuckoo clocks, says this website, which may have had a slightly interesting translation. The Brandenburg's Environment Agency is giving him headaches. Elon Musk used to getting his own way in a simpler procedure of the United States. Tesla removing parts of its gigafactory or even the whole thing is an option if they don't get the authorizations they need, but that's not going to happen in a million years. Brandenburg's government can't wait for the factory to be operational because it's creating thousands of jobs, even creating a Tesla task force to help the company, they say. In part, delays caused by Tesla themselves changing the plans and amending applications. Again, I'll pop a link to Berlin Spectator in the show notes if you want to read more. This whole thing about Tesla not knowing how Germany operates makes me laugh every time I read it. Since they bought Grohmann years ago, they have operated a German business very well. And when they bought Grohmann and had to renegotiate with the union employees over bonuses, pay packages, remuneration, stock options, more as well, then like Tesla know how to do business in Germany. They have been doing it a long time. They own a factory in Germany, which makes the bits, which makes the cars. Everyone kind of forgets about Grohmann. And they're like, oh no, Tesla's gone to Germany. They can't believe the bureaucracy. They knew exactly what they were getting into. They had tens of options about where they could have built. I saw a really credible story saying, oh, they're going to be in Poland, going to be in Turkey, going to be in Estonia. Nobody thought they'd be in Germany because of some of the ways that the German authorities work. But they decided to for good reason. Like, they're not stupid. Anyway, I'll move on. Let's present the other side of the argument now. A local politician is denying the claim. Brandenburg economic minister, so he's not Germany's economic minister, but the area, Jörg Steinbeck, has been one of Tesla's most vocal supporters in their quest to open the German facility, isn't buying into this six-month delay story. He still believes Tesla's on pace for a late summer or early autumn start at Giga Berlin, telling Teslarati, I don't have the faintest idea of how anyone can come up with a six-month delay. If nothing happens out of the ordinary, I expect to start production in late summer, early autumn. So, you know, you decide what late summer, early autumn is. I would say September. I'd say mid to late September is late summer, early autumn. So I've been telling anyone who will listen when they say, oh, you know, when are the Europeans going to start making Model Ys out of Germany? I'm going to say, look, end of June, beginning of July, we expect those first few cars to be made, maybe not even customer cars, but starting to verify the processes that are there. Look, maybe I'm out by 3 months. Maybe it'll be September, October. The thing is, we've been told for a long time, we've been told for a while that volume production won't be this year. In January's earnings call, Elon Musk said volume production 2022, first time he'd said that I had heard him say that. Then the earnings call 2 weeks ago said volume production in 2022. Like, none of this is a surprise to anyone. So if they are delayed by 3 months, it's not a big deal. Now, there wasn't a groundbreaking ceremony in the kind of same fanfare way that there was for Giga Shanghai. But around this time last year, so 12 months ago, land was being cleared. I remember a drone video I watched on the 1st of July. The piles were going in. So you can say it's roughly, because you know, we're at the beginning of May right now, you can say it's roughly been about a year since they started seriously working on that site. If they were producing a handful of cars by autumn, September, October, it's still an incredible achievement for Tesla. And if they do end up delaying into January, then that's absolutely fine. It's not going to move the needle in the great scheme of the world moving to cleaner, greener transport. Well, Reuters reporting on this as well and saying that part of the problems are because they've been tweaking applications. Tesla's been tweaking the application for their Gigafactory, and the German state in which the plant is being built saying that it's not possible at this stage to how long it'll take to approve the site. The Ministry of Agriculture in the German state of Brandenburg said the amended application would include the construction and operation of a battery cell factory, previously flagged by Tesla, says this Reuters report. They continue that Tesla earlier this month sharply criticized the regulatory process and the opening of the Gigafactory being held up by, you know, effectively kind of pen pushers in the back offices. But that was just posturing and, you know, political games at play there. There's nothing more to worry about than that. I thought always the plan was always to have a battery factory, a cell production line at Giga Berlin. Maybe it's because it was going to be in an existing building and they've had to plan more buildings. I don't know. It's always the case that they were always going to make their own cells there. So I don't quite know why everyone again is surprised that, oh, hang on, a new application's gone in. They're going to make batteries there. Well, they always were. Elon Musk has said for years that every new Giga factory will also make the cells, ever since he was talking about the frustrations of either making cells out of the US and bringing them in when Panasonic did for S&X, or making the cells at Nevada and shipping them to Fremont. Anyway, let's move on a little bit more and talk about the next story on the podcast. Oh, by the way, if you have any comments, leave them below. I'm fascinated to see what you think about this whole story that is kind of a story, but it's not. I mean, I can well believe it that there is a delay. I don't believe the bit that Elon's like, hey, guys, take 6 months. But I can well believe that there are some delays, maybe 3 or even 6 months, because what they're doing is still in record fast time. But I'd love to know your thoughts. Okay, moving on. And let's talk about the Global EV Outlook 2021. International Energy Agency tweeted about this a few days ago now. We just released the Global EV Outlook 2021, they say. It shows an accelerating momentum despite a pandemic. After a 40% rise over the whole of 2020, EV sales more than doubled in the first quarter of 2021 from the same period a year earlier. They released their Global EV Outlook, which shows accelerating momentum despite the pandemic. And last year, Europe actually overtook China in terms of EV sales for the first time. Registrations at 1.4 million compared to China's 1.2. Too early to say if that's a lasting shift. China's market has started strongly in 2021. They say that under current policy settings, the number of EVs on the road globally could be 145 million in 2030. And when you think about what we were doing 10 years ago in EVs, it seems like a blink of an eye, and now here we are 10 years later. Can't imagine in 2030, firstly, how many cars there are going to be on the roads and how good they're going to be, but also that number, 145 million in 2030, seems entirely plausible. Greater policy efforts to put the world on track to meet climate goals will boost the EV market. And not just four wheels, but two and three as well. Motorbikes and mopeds, the largest single EV sector, with 25 million sold last year, mostly in Asia. Electric buses, vans and trucks are growing rapidly too, they say. A long thread they put on Twitter. Link in the show notes if you want to read more. Link through to the full report as well if you are interested. Okay, let's talk about the lower benchmark for battery costs. This is a number that you'll have heard bandied about for years, actually, this $100 per kilowatt hour. Now, Steve Levine, who is blogging at The Mobilist as a medium.com site, now, clearly, he knows his stuff. And I haven't come across Steve before, but I've, as a part of my research today, had a look back at his body, not all of it, but a lot of his writing. And I think he's done has an amazing body of work to look back on. So he clearly knows his stuff. But on this one article, I disagree with him, which is fine. He doesn't care what I think. Who am I? For a decade or more, he says, the orthodoxy has been that if you could profoundly lower the cost of the battery, which is the most expensive bit of an EV, you bust through the sticker price of combustion vehicles and bring on a new age of electric transport. Dave Howell is the longtime head of US Energy Department's influential Office of Vehicle Technologies, and he told Steve that there is a new target. It was $100 per kilowatt hour. It's now $60 per kilowatt hour to reach price parity with combustion vehicles. Really interesting article. I'll pop a link in the show notes. Have a look if you're interested in this kind of stuff. Steve's kind of essential argument in this article is all about how he feels the goalposts have moved and that nobody told him that the $100 per kilowatt hour maxim was no longer applicable. And I kind of think, well, there's been a few indicators over the years. Certainly a couple of years ago, Elon Musk was talking about how Tesla were at $100 at cell level, not at pack level, but certainly at cell level. And then, you know, maybe from a year ago, some of the Chinese manufacturers, I think BYD with their lithium iron phosphate cells, the LFP cells, they're at about $80 per kilowatt hour. And it hasn't, you know, fundamentally made EVs cheaper than combustion cars, just hitting a certain arbitrary number. So I think that kind of $100 thing was banded around for a long time, but it was, I never thought that like the day we hit it, all of a sudden it was binary and everyone was like, hey, I'm no longer buying combustion cars. So we've been below that for a long time now. In a follow-up exchange of emails, he says that Howell told him not only had the US office adopted this new standard of $60 per kilowatt hour, but 2 years ago in 2019, they're even suggesting $50 per kilowatt hour using a metallic lithium anode. When prices come down to that, then price parity is achieved. The big thing that the $60 per kilowatt hour target will give all EVs, regardless of their size, he says, and style, cost parity with combustion Cousins. And James Frith, head of battery storage at BNEF, saying that both VW and Tesla being able to market at competitively priced compact EVs, which will make the same profit as conventional models. And again, I don't want to argue with someone who's clearly written a lot about EVs, but you know, I've seen some stunning deals that we've talked about on the podcast lately. Some Chevy Bolt deals for lease deals for $100-something a month over here, just for over £200 a month. I think with like £200 deposit down, and then £200 a month, you can get a new Peugeot E208, which is exactly the same price, and I think on one of the specs cheaper than the combustion version. So I think, you know, we were kind of all expecting fireworks on the day that an EV was cheaper than its combustion cousin, but it depends on what areas are putting finance deals together and also what those manufacturers are incentivizing. But I've seen some already that actually there's some stunning EV deals out there, but you know, not all. And I'm definitely not saying that the vast majority of these EVs are not still very expensive to buy. Don't get me wrong. All right, let's move on and let's talk Citroën. Citroën's all-electric AMI, A-M-I, is coming to the US. Citroën may be coming back to the US, but not in a big way. Its all-electric AMI is coming to Washington, D.C., and car-sharing services called Free to Move. Of course, Peugeot, Citroën, Fiat Chrysler, recent merger. Companies called Stellantis now. Stellantis own Free to Move, so it makes sense that they would bring one of their own cars to their car sharing service, announcing on their LinkedIn page. In France, where you can drive one of these from 14 years old, because it's not technically a car, and without a driver's license, has a 5.5 kilowatt hour lithium ion battery, does 45 kilometers an hour, it'll do about 70 kilometers. It's the most stupidly gorgeous, cute looking thing. And in France, you can even have some car share through Free to Move for about $20 a month at its cheapest. For a car. Euros. 20 euros a month. It's crazy cheap. And you know what? It keeps you dry, and it's probably fun, and it fits two people, and it's brilliant. And it's great that it's not just going to be another car like so many that are European only, and it's great that those cars are going to be coming to the US. A very different market, I totally understand. A market that loves trucks, much more than we do over here. And a market that loves the F-Series. The Ford F-150 Lightning name is returning for the EV version of the Ford pickup truck. According to a Ford document provided by a source to Car and Driver, the electric Ford F-150 goes on sale summer next year, so there's a little while to wait yet. Ford sold almost 800,000 F-Series trucks last year, 787,422 F-Series trucks in 2020 alone. That their range of trucks is bigger than most car companies, and the new electric model is going to have to be brilliant in every possible way. It's got to beat the Hummer. It's got to beat the Chevy Silverado, the Cybertruck, all doing 350 miles plus. Ford saying the F-150 will be, of all their range of F-Series trucks, or F-150s, apologies, having more horsepower and more torque and fastest acceleration of any F-150 currently on the market. So that means, you know, 45 seconds, 0-60, 500 horsepower plus. It's going to be, if they get it right, amazing. And it's going to be interesting how so many petrol heads and truck lovers move to electric trucks, and how many people who love EVs but weren't truck buyers buy one of these. It's going to be a fascinating next couple of years, the way it shakes out. Next, we'll talk charging. The electric highway in the UK. The electric highway, they describe it as the world's first nationwide charging network. I guess it was. It was nationwide, and we had it many years ago. And that's both a blessing and a curse, because the gear is really old now. And my car charges on AC, and I've had some failures recently. Turned up on Sunday. So yesterday, yesterday morning, I went to see the in-laws. And there's one in near a place called Southampton on the motorway. Didn't need to charge, but we pulled in. And I thought, oh, I'll just plug in for a quick burst. Whole unit was turned off. It was completely dead. Not just the screen blank, but the whole thing powered down. And if I'd been desperate for a charge, that would have been really sucky. This network takes a kicking here in the UK. Every time they do a survey of which networks do you like or not. So again, I've been very lucky. My car is an AC charging car. Others have had many more problems. But now they're upgrading some hardware. Hallelujah. The installation is the first under the Electric Highway's new partnership with GridServe, which saw the company take a 25% in the Electric Highway. It's the rugby services at Junction 1, in case you're interested, off the M6. 12 new high-powered chargers from Tritium. The hardware's amazing. It's good stuff. It's very reliable. 350 kilowatt fast chargers, and they're all existing 50 kilowatt pumps are being replaced, maybe not all with these, but that's great. We want to see a lot of them, and we want high powered ones, and it's expensive. With investment from Hitachi Capital, you know, operating a charge point network, being a charge point operator, is probably one of the worst businesses in the world. It's massively capital intensive. Nobody likes paying for electricity, which I find bonkers. So nobody complains about petrol. So, you know, pay a good price for reliable hardware when you want it. And I want these networks to make a good business case, not just be throwing money at it for 5 years in the hope of an exit in the future to make some money. So it's a horrible business to be in. And good luck to anyone who goes down that route, because it seems you can't please anyone. They're either not working or unreliable. And then when it worked perfectly, no one ever says, hey, thank you. It's like, oh, good, I charged. I'm off now. So anyway, hiding to nothing. Moving on. GM are next in the news today. GM releasing a fix for their Chevy Bolt EV battery issue. General Motors putting a fix in place after recalling 69,000 units of the electric hatchback. The 2017 to 2019 model year Bolt EV was receiving reports of vehicles suddenly overheating, even catching fire, says GMAuthority.com. Dealerships will use diagnostic tools to test affected vehicles, they say, for battery problems and replace the battery packs as necessary. And these vehicles also get advanced onboard diagnostic software. So it should never happen again, they say. The automaker will release a software update restoring battery capacity in the affected cars to go back to 100%, because they have been throttled to 90%, I believe, until now, according to GM Authority. Chief Engineer Jesse Ortega said previously the battery fires can be traced to a defective batch of cells from a 3-year period, and they think it's now more than sorted. Good luck, anyone who owns one of those vehicles. Hopefully it's all sorted. Keep me up to date and in touch with what the latest is with that. Okay, moving on. Here's a brand we don't get. We do now. Genesis, electrifying their range. The G80, big luxury EV saloon, arrives in the UK and Europe, actually, according to an Autocar report that I picked up. Headline features include an 800-volt charging system to make the most of charging as quick as possible, vehicle to load so you can plug things into it and pull 3-point-something kilowatts out of it. Combined, the twin motors in the G80 will have 365 brake horsepower, 0 to 64.9 seconds. The G80, called the electrified G80 in the Autocar report. Now, normally when you see electrified, it means it's some shabby, horrible hybrid. But this is pure electric. Anyway, it has active noise control with an array of sensors and microphones, they say, to create a noise cancellation effect. It's got advanced suspension, which uses the front camera and sat-nav to alter the ride. The optimum driving experience, I think you'll find, they say, according to the road that you are about to drive over. More and more car companies are doing that. I'll pop a link to Autocar in the show notes if you'd like to read more. Genesis brand coming to Europe and the UK later this year. Now, my American friends who do have this brand in their market say that actually Genesis is well worth a look. Give them the time of day, because they're making some interesting vehicles at really good prices. Okay, moving on. Final story today. Arrival is partnering with Uber to make an EV for ride-sharing drivers, developing a purpose-built EV specifically for the drivers in Uber. They've got about 1,300 individuals across 8 different countries at Arrival. They've got 2 headquarters, London and Charlotte, North Carolina. They are entering production of the Uber car in Q3 2023. Electrek describes it as an affordable, purpose-built EV with Uber drivers in mind. There's over 30 million estimated rideshare drivers globally, and the expedited shift towards EVs can help reduce carbon emissions. Arrival telling Electrek that if other rideshare companies feel the Arrival car makes sense to them, it's not an exclusive arrangement. Arrival not confirming where the EV is being built. Wording in the press release specifically about UK and EU at least. Probably starting in one of the microfactories, I would think, probably here in the UK. That is your news for today. That car is going to be very interesting, by the way. Right, okay, moving on. And question of the week with emobilitynorway.com. I'd love you to answer this. Email me your answer. I'll read it out on Sunday's podcast. EVs are connected cars, but how much data are you willing to give up? And what are you willing to receive in return? How much do you mind insurance companies, car makers themselves, knowing about you, where you've been, how you've been driving? Or do you want it all private? And if you are giving up some of that personal data, what do you want in return? Let me know. My address is hello@evnewsdaily.com. Well, if you can have a check out of our Patreon page, how we fund the show. Thank you very much to everyone who supports the podcast. patreon.com/evnewsdaily. Little daily mention for our premium partners, Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of The Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, nationalcarcharging.com and alohacharge.com. Derek Riley has a great EV Review Ireland YouTube channel. Check him out. Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK, and emobilitynorway.com. Have a good and see you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.